The beautiful event we're celebrating today has a long prehistory, one that goes back beyond Zach's proposal to Courtney last September 10th on the beach of Palm Island, Florida, with Zach's unintentionally finishing a cappella the refrain of George Strait's country classic, Check Yes or No. It goes back well before their first date, September 25th, 2015 in Central Park, to greet Pope Francis as he passed through, blessing them and tens of thousands beside them. It extends far beyond the time they first met at an ISI conference in Richmond, Virginia in 2013, or the time they re-met 2 years later on the Feast of the Transfiguration in 2015 at a party to watch a presidential debate. Goes back even further than when their parents, Thomas and Janet, Joseph and Cynthia, got the joy-filled news to expect them 2.5 decades ago. The prehistory to what happens today goes back to before even God said, "Let there be light." And so to understand the significance and beauty of this day, we need to see where it fits into God's plan for them and for the world. When Jesus, in the gospel we just heard, was asked about the nature of marriage, he took it back to the beginning, when God made them male and female. The book of Genesis, at the beginning of time, when God created Adam, Adam had God all to himself in the garden. All of creation had been made for him to govern. He was perfectly in right relationship with God, even though he seemed to have everything one could ask for. Something, more specifically, someone was missing. And after it, God had said in the first six phases of creation, it was good, 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 with the creation of the human person, it was very good. God finally thundered, "It is not good for man to be alone." So he created Eve, a fitting partner, symbolically out of his side, to show that they stand side by side, equal before him. When Adam saw Eve, he exclaimed, "Finally, this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." A Hebrew idiom saying that they share the strengths and weaknesses. They were to be one flesh. And as the text ends, as Jesus reiterates in the gospel, we learn that this is the reason why a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife, and they become one flesh in love. The upshot of the creation account is that God, who is love, has created the human person in his image and likeness, in love and for love. Because no one can love in a vacuum, God could not be solitary. There needed to be a lover and a beloved. And in God, the love between Father and Son was so strong as to take on personality. For that reason, in creating the human person, God created him, created not just him, male and female, but them, male and female. A communion between man and woman whose love for each other could be so strong as to make love, to generate new life as a fruit of their loving communion of persons. From the first marriage of Adam and Eve to your marriage today, Zach and Courtney, marriage was created by God to be a sacrament of love, to help you to grow to be more and more like God, and at the same time more fully human. Today, you have not only received a sacrament, today you have become a sacrament, a visible sign, as St. John Paul II used to say, pointing to the invisible reality of the Trinitarian loving communion of persons. You have been called, chosen, and commissioned by God, not just to be a living reminder of the fruitful, faithful, indissoluble love of God, to reflect efficaciously in your own marriage Christ's love for his bride, the church, but to preach that gospel of human love and the divine plan in words and in body language for as long as you both shall live. St. Paul, in today's first reading, taken from his letter to the Ephesians, gives you challenging advice about how to put this truth of Christian marriage into practice. He says to young couples of every age, be subordinate, be subject, be submissive to one another out of reverence for Christ. See the image of Christ in each other. Be like Christ for each other. seek to love each other as Christ has loved you first. St. Paul then gets specific. He tells husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and handed himself over for her to make her holy. Zach, Christ calls you to love Courtney in this way, and he will give you the strength you need to do it, to love her by laying down your life for her in ways big and small, ordinary and extraordinary, from showing up on time or even a little early, to being willing to be crucified to save her life in this world and forever. St. Paul similarly tells wives, be subordinate to your husbands as to the Lord. In other words, Courtney, try to love Zach with the fervor with which everyone here knows you love Jesus. Be patient with him. Compliment and encourage his poetry. Inspire him in his vocation to lay down his life by your loving receptivity, so that he may do so, as we heard before you exchange vow, not as a burden, but as a joy. What you have done in getting married here in this most beautiful and historical St. Patrick's Cathedral today is a courageous and countercultural act. Today, so many are afraid of making a commitment, especially a commitment for life, for better or worse, richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. Seeing so many relationships break down, many millennials prefer to keep their options open. They refuse to entrust their whole future to another. They seek to receive some of the comforts and benefits that come from relationships that in outward ways resemble marriage, but without giving themselves totally to what God desires and true love entails. Many others are confused about what marriage is, with some thinking it's just romantic symbolism, or a piece of paper, or a temporary union for as long as the two shall love, or a changing reality whose meaning can be defined and redefined by the parties, or the culture, or the courts. Today, you're making a commitment, a public act, in contrast to this zeitgeist, that marriage means something, and something essential to human happiness and flourishing. And you have been strengthened to do this by the great marriage courses you received in Buffalo, New York, and Preston Hollow, Texas, in the schools of marital love of your parents, whom today not just you, but the whole church thanks in helping you get ready for this day. Today you're professing that you're entering into not just a contract, but a covenant, a sacred commitment not just to each other, but to God, consecrating your love in a special way within the love of God who created you, arranged for you to meet and find each other 2 years later again, who today himself made a sacred commitment to you to accompany you for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, all your days. You're publicly professing your faith that you desire not just to make the other happy, but to be God's instrument to help make the one you love holy. You're avowing that the gift you ultimately want to give each other is not just a beautiful ring or the exchange of a last name or even the gift of yourself, however total. Rather, you're publicly affirming that you're seeking to give God to each other, to help each other grow in his image and likeness, that you want your bond truly to be a holy matrimony, one that will lead you hand in hand, we pray, down the nave of a sanctuary even more beautiful than this one, for a nuptial mass and a banquet that will know no end. And that's why it's so fitting that immediately after you exchange your marriage vows, you and all of us here are now celebrating a nuptial mass. Because there's a great connection between your marriage and the mass. Here at St. Patrick's, over the altar, like in so many other of the most historic churches in Christianity, there's an exquisite baldachin. The early Christians used to illustrate the reality between marriage and the Mass in their architecture, covering altars with a canopy, just like ancient beds were covered, to communicate that the altar is the marriage bed of the union between Christ, the bridegroom, and his bride, the Church. Catholics believe that it's here on this altar that we, the bride of Christ, in the supreme act of love, receive within ourselves the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus, the divine bridegroom, becoming one flesh with him and being made capable of bearing fruit with him in acts of love. Right here, this beautiful marriage bed of the altar is the means by which Christ will regularly renew you, Courtney and Zach, in the indissoluble one flesh union he has formed in you today. This is the way by which you will receive within yourselves Christ's love for you and become more capable of sharing that love with each other. This is the channel Jesus provides to strengthen you to continue in your courageous, countercultural witness to the sacrament of marriage in all its beauty and fullness. Today, around this marriage bed of Christ's union with his Church and with you, inspired by your faith, your family, your friends, so many fortuitous visitors to St. Patrick's this afternoon, and all the angels and saints, join me in praying that the Lord, who has begun this good work in you and brought you here to this altar, will nourish your sacred vocation and bring it to completion in heaven. We ask the Lord never to stop blessing you with his holy spousal love, and through the way that you share that love with each other, never stop blessing us all. Praise be Jesus Christ.